Milkshap was running for governor the first time, and that was right after the Six-Day War. The Near East Report published a book, a pamphlet called Myth and Facts on the Near East, and we wanted to put it into the Chronicle. Then it dawned on me, why don't I get somebody to pay for it? So a friend of mine arranged for me to see Milton Schaap. I went to Philadelphia, and I sold Milton Schaap on the idea of publishing this for the entire state of Pennsylvania and distributed it both in the Chronicle and in the Exponent. Before I go any further, that's the Philadelphia Federation paper. Before I go any further, I'm a very political person. If anything has come through, I hope that came through. And I like to cover myself, so I went to the Federation and said, this is what I want to do. Milchap is a political candidate, but there'll be nothing about the attribution of anything political. It'll just say that on one page, this is being brought to you as a public service by Milchap, period. Now, if you guys have any problem with this, with your Republican Jews, let me know about it, because I'm not going to make a fool of myself. No problem. If it's going to make money, go ahead and do it. We don't care. Okay. I sold it to Milchap, and I came back, and I flew back, actually, without touching the airplane, because at that point, I probably looked at about a $30,000 profit for the Chronicle, which was one hell of a sale. I called Saul. I came in. I met him. We had dinner together. We were having a ball. The Chronicle immediately went to work putting it together. And then one day, about 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a call from Saul. I figured, my God, is Tibby sick? What's wrong? What's happened? Did another war break out? And I was sleeping through it. Al, you better be at the Federation at 8:30 in the morning. Why? We just came out of a Federation board meeting. I don't think we're going to be able to publish the thing on Schaap. We have a problem with some of our Republicans who are very unhappy about Schaap doing this. They thought you should have offered it to the Republicans too. And I said, my only comment was, find me a Jew who's running for governor and I'll offer it to him too, who's a Republican. So I went to that particular meeting. It was a bloody one. I was informed. I wasn't asked. Well, at that point, they asked Al Bloom what he thought, and Al put his finger up in the air and figured, oh, the Federation doesn't want us to do it. So he said, I never thought it was a good idea. He never said it to me before that, but at that point, it was not a good idea. I wanted to kill him at that point. And then Gerald Soroka, my friend, said, you're not going to do it. That's all there is to it. If I have to go to your board, you're not going to do it. And I recognized there are wars you can win and there are wars you're going to lose, and that was the war I was going to lose. But I became so incensed, I leaped over the table to strangle Soroka, and Leonard Rudolph had to pull me off the table. I was very emotional.
Never happened.
To lose $30,000 was a lot of money for the Chronicle. But this is the price you pay. And I did it. But Soroka and I have had a love-hate relationship. It's now a love relationship. Gerald Soroka was executive director of the Federation. S-O-R-O-K-E-R. He was tough with a buck.
I just finished
interviewing him. Soroka. Amazing guy. I published his book right over there. Fundraising for Philanthropy. He never mentioned the fact that Chronicle published it for him, did he? I guarantee you he did. Because no one would publish it. I published it for him. I sold it for him. I got him a hell of a lot of money, which he gave to charity. That's what the Soroka Fund at the Federation is built on. Fine. But for me, it was a good political move because that way my wars with him would end. So, and it didn't hurt the Chronicle because it gave us a lot of publicity. What other little war can I tell you about with the Federation? Maybe it'll come to my mind. You don't stop this. Go ahead.
Al, is there anything that that it's different in publishing a newspaper for a particular group that is different than publishing for the general public.
All right. And it comes down to this, Sylvia, that the Jewish Chronicle, being community-owned, is responsible for its actions for the total community. If the Chronicle were owned by a private person, the editorials of that paper would reflect his particular prejudices. Freedom of the press is an interesting word, but there's really no absolute freedom. If the paper is owned by someone, it reflects that person. The Chronicle has to reflect the Jewish community. We have to be constructive. We can be critical, but we have to be constructive, trying to develop a consensus for the community. The big problem with the Chronicle is that we operate under a very severe self-discipline. We know that what we do can rebound to the good of the community or to the detriment of the community. The community spends a lot of money in public relations and community relations, but the Chronicle, in one fell swoop, because we impact on both Jews and Gentiles, our advertisers, the agencies, people who subscribe to this paper, including Arabs who subscribe to this paper, we can really cause a hell of a problem if we're not disciplined. So we operate on that discipline. The Chronicle actually has become a hallmark, a standard in the American Jewish press field, I guess because of the way our finances have made us independent, the fact that the Chronicle gives that aura of being responsible. We've been called to act as consultant for many papers around the country. I guess we take particular pride here at the Chronicle that the great city of New York, with all of its myriads of people involved in communication, came to Pittsburgh, and I was hired to be a consultant for the Federation of New York to set up their newspaper for them.
One of the questions I was going to ask is, what do you view as your most significant accomplishment? That sounds like a very significant accomplishment.
Well, that's one of the, I think that I, my significant accomplishment that I have lived as, I leave as my legacy is a functioning newspaper. Outside of my family, that's a different part of my life. But in the public sense, this is something that has not done harm to the community. It has done good for the community. I think it has brought a sense of total community to people here where they can identify with the totality. And it has not been a drain on the community. I think I leave a professional operation as my legacy, and that's the only thing I really care about.
Is there anything you would have done differently if
you had to? Oh, yeah. Everything in your life, you think about what you might have done. Yeah, there are things I think I might have done differently, but I won't get into that because it involves people and it doesn't matter. It's interesting that when I think about the great city of New York, and I want to dwell on that for a second, when I went up there on the initial interview to talk to them, I was given a week to do a study to find out what was wrong with the paper. And I found that that paper was being operated like a financial sieve. The Federation was giving something like $500,000 or $750,000, and the people of that paper were behind in their income tax, Social Security tax. They had sweetheart deals between salesmen and advertisers. They had one guy operating a private business there, and nobody knew what was going on. And I'll never forget my final meeting, the day I went up between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and the day of before Yom Kippur, Arab Yom Kippur, before Kol Nidre, I told them I had to be out of New York by noon because I wanted to get home in time to get ready to go to shul. And we had an 8 o'clock meeting where I started to tell them what was wrong with their paper, and these are big-time lawyers up there. Congressman Tenzer was there. There were people there that I didn't believe. And I'm telling them, with all their great insight, they didn't know what the hell was going on. The They were running a bleeding operation.
May I interrupt? When you said you found out about the sweetheart deals and all that, how did you find that out?
Because I'm a good study at finding things out. I ask questions.
Did you find that out by the books? Or?
By the books. I can read a set of books. I can look what's going on. I look at what they're buying, and I'm looking at what they're producing. When I see a newspaper that has 60% of its revenue on accounts receivable, there's something wrong there. And when their audits, their internal audits that they were running, if anybody believed them, they believed in fairy tales too. Anybody can take a look at the Chronicle's audit, monthly audits, and whatever you see today is going to be good in June. It's the same thing, but you have to. You can't go to sleep stealing. Just can't do this. I talked to a lot of people in New York. You'd be amazed what people will tell you if you ask questions. Nobody asked any questions. The problem with some management people, whether it be lay or professional, they think because they have a title and their door is therefore closed, they don't have to have any access by the people who work for them with them. I never operate that way. I go out and I talk to people and I want to know what the hell's going on. I think part of my success at the Chronicle is that I'm available and people can talk to me. And we've had a couple stupid things happen here that I would never have known about if I had not gone out and found out that people were playing games here. And therefore, they were fired. We don't tolerate that kind of stuff. The Chronicle is not for anyone's personal gain, period. That's the name of the game. Now, mind you, we do not take community money. We do not. This is not taking away from charity. But damn it, it's a community responsibility. As a manager, this is what you're supposed to do. I found this the case in New York, and subsequently, they had me come up there for 13 weeks, where they paid me a nice piece of change for doing that, and that money was turned over to the Chronicle. I cried a little bit, but that's the moral thing to do.
When was that?
That was in 1982. Then I had my heart attack.
Okay. You mentioned you got some sort of honor in China.
Oh, the Rudolph Award. The Rudolph Award is given to the professional in the communal field, a communal worker who has done most to enhance the image of the Jewish community. I was the first and only non-social worker ever to get one.
And
it was a great... It was a great debate about whether they can give it to a non-professional. And as Howard Rieger said to them, he doesn't cost us money. He's serving the community. What the hell do you want him to do?
Have you gotten any other honors?
Here at the Chronicle,
before,
no. That's I never put myself in for anything. I put my people in for things. I never do. That's not my management style. When I would be at a board meeting, I would tell the board about what everybody at the Chronicle does, and I never mention what I do, because I'm the manager. I take the garbage, and I give the credit, and that's how you operate. And they understand that, because my only evaluation is what appears in the audit every year. And that's it, and that's what you're judged by, the fact that the community has never, ever suffered from Chronicle. I'll tell you the story of the Kahane business. Did I ever tell you that one? Okay. Kahane came to Pittsburgh and was going to speak at Hebrew Institute. Did I give you that?
No, okay. I meant
okay, okay. Yeah, well, the Jewish fascists.
Kahane.
Oh, yeah, the Jewish fascists. Well, the question went up immediately in the community, why is he speaking at an organization that the Federation sponsors and pays for?
Where was he speaking?
Hebrew Institute. Well, everybody started writing letters, and there was a real to-do in the town. And when there's a to-do in the town, it's going to affect the gift-giving. People immediately will say, I'm going to stop giving. The fact that, you know, that's the dumbest reason in the world, okay, fine. Saul Abrams had already left. It was the new guy up there. who I have a FOIA block on, who is also a Baha'i. I don't put that on there. Forget that you ever heard that. Okay. Yeah, people already know who he is now. I think he had a hand in letting Kahani speak there. He denied it, but that's fine. The rabbis in town, in General Assembly, were sending a letter to the Chronicle to be published, condemning the Federation and calling upon people to express their distaste for the Federation in whatever form they thought necessary. Well, that was an open invitation. Don't give. So I talked to Rieger, Howard Rieger, who was executive director of the Federation, and I said, we have a war, we've got to do something, and this is what I think we're going to do right, real fast. I want a release from you, deny that the Federation in any way had any knowledge of this, that the Hebrew Institute was not aware that Kahani was going to speak, and that they got the facilities under false pretenses. I will then take your letter and show it to the rabbis, and I will muffle down what they're going to say. Let them just condemn Kahani, and I'll put the two of them together on the front page, and it'll be a good way to handle this problem. And I had Bart Cowan write a long, long, long explanation, as only lawyers can do, on, he was the president of the Hebrew Institute, why the Hebrew Institute was to be held blameless in all this. And we published it all. I held up the paper for a day in order to accomplish this. Well, it took the Federation off the hook. The president of the Federation called me and said, if I could kiss you, I would kiss you. Thank you. That's why we pay you. And my answer to him was, the day that you pay me, it'll be a day I go on relief. Because that's the kind of relationship I've had. I guess I'm very outspoken. I do not abide mealy-mouthed people. I say what I think, and so, as you said, what do I sometimes regret? Sometimes I regret what came out of my mouth, because I paid for some of the things that have come out of my mouth. But that's me. That was one of the things I did with Federer. Can I tell you the story of the kids going to Hillel Academy? Okay. We had a young couple, young family, where the wife was a convert, and they had two children, and she was expecting a third, and they wanted to enroll their children at Hillel. And the wife was a convert, I mentioned, and subsequently I found out she was Japanese. And Hillel refused to accept the kids because the conversion of the wife was not halachically correct. Conversion was performed by Goldblum of Beth Sholem, who's an Orthodox rabbi at a conservative synagogue. He has smicha from an Orthodox yeshiva. Okay, right away I began to smell. Okay, I knew nothing about this, and he went to them and asked them what could be done. And for a year and a couple months, this poor guy was led around like a yo-yo, up and down without being given an answer. I knew nothing about this. He wrote a letter to the Chronicle. The man.
The man whose wife
was there. And we had a discussion. I talked to him. And I said, what you're telling me is tough. I'm going to publish your letter, but I'm going to hold it off a week because I want to give the rabbis a chance to answer this. Well, it was like opening up a chamber and mustard gas came storming out. Hell broke loose. The rabbi responsible for this called me and said, I don't have all the facts, but he will be glad to write a letter explaining his position and answer to the young man's position. And the young man's name was Kaplan, I'll tell you that. A lawyer. Nice guy. This rabbi ran down to the Federation and said to them, and when he came back into town, you have to stop Zecher from publishing the letter. He can't do it. I've done everything you've ever asked me to do. He, the rabbi for the Federation, I have put my professional life in jeopardy, my ethical life in jeopardy, because of the stance I've taken for Federation. Now you have to help me.
Excuse me, I want to ask you something. You are the business manager. What?
I was the general manager at that time.
General manager, because it would be the editor who would have to do with the letter normally.
Yeah, normally, but the editor had it. But my rule is here is that if anything's going to come in, there's going to be a controversy, I know about it. Because I don't want to find out about it secondhand.
And you could, what if the editor had said we don't want to do it, you could overrule it?
I overrule. Since my name appeared on the on checks at the time, I have a little bit of input. I never overrule editors unless it's something real drastic. And the relationship that I've had with Joel Roebling has been excellent. I want to talk about that before this tape is over.
We have more time.
Okay, all right.
So the rabbi...
Went to the Federation, and I got a call, and the conversation went like this. Howard Ringer said, look, we don't own the Chronicle, because it suited him at the time to deny he owned the Chronicle. We don't tell the Chronicle what to do, which he never does. And besides, no one tells Zecker what to do, not even his board, which I thought was very funny. Okay, then Howard called and told me all that, and I said, thank you very much. My board has to hear that. You want to cause problems for me, but that's neither here nor there. Okay, the rabbi said that he wanted to have me come to a meeting with this young couple. I had also, at that time, I'd gone to Irv Chin, who was a very close friend of mine, an Orthodox rabbi. And I said, Irv, we have a problem. You know, the Orthodox have an image problem to begin with. This is not going to enhance it. And a lot of this pain is self-inflicted. We've got to do something. So Irv acted as my ambassador to the Orthodox rabbinate. They had a meeting, and they decided they were going to convene a Bet Din, a Bet Din, B-E-T-D-I-N. And they wanted me to be there. I refused.
It's a court.
A court. Yeah. Because I'm not a judge. I report. I do not judge. Then I felt, this is getting cute. I'm going to my board. I want my board to be apprised of this. It was one of the best board meetings under the face of this earth. It could have been a bloody mess. Because we have two guys on our board who are Orthodox. But no personalities. We got into the essence of what is the role of the Chronicle, and private people can edit themselves what goes into the paper and what controversies we are going to cover or not cover, and we might as well close up shop and publish a house organ. And the vote at the time was 12 to 2 with 2 abstentions to continue with what we were going to do. Of course, somebody informed the rabbi involved because he wanted to know who the two were that voted. Rabbi, he wanted to know the names of the 8 who voted against them, and he also wanted to know whether the reform rabbi on our board voted against them. I told him, forget it. And he started to castigate me that I'm doing this to publicize myself. Fine. I didn't create the problem. I'm just trying to solve it. So I told Irv they were going to convene this Bet Din, and I said, why don't you do this? I have a personal thing, understanding this. My own daughter-in-law is a convert to Judaism. She went through 3 conversions. My grandchildren went through conversions.
Your grandchildren?
Because they wanted to have an Orthodox. They were born before she had an Orthodox conversion, so therefore they wanted to be sure, if my children explained to me, if they wanted to marry an Orthodox Jew, that's their prerogative. If they want to go to Israel to live, that's their prerogative. Okay, my children being what they are, they do their own thing anyway. All right. So Irv announced this solution at the meeting. This young Kaplan was there, and he agreed that he would do this. And his wife was pregnant with the 3rd one, so I said, she'll get it through osmosis. And we solved the problem.
The Orthodox accepted her conversion.
She would go through another conversion, an Orthodox conversion. Yeah. Actually, she didn't have to go through the conversion. They had the kids go through the conversion, that's all, because the kids were going to be admitted to Hillel on that basis. What I tried to do was make it face-saving for everyone concerned. I have a letter, which I should bring it, should show it to you. You'd ask about what I get. These kinds of letters I have put away. It's the most warm, touching letter I have ever received. It never appears as a letter to the editor. It never will appear as a letter to the editor.
We'll make a copy and put it in with our guests.
But this is the kind of thing that makes my job worthwhile.
And was this from the couple?
This is from the couple.
I want to tell you that I think that we can go on. May as well finish the tape, because you want to talk about...
I have a problem. I want to be out of here by 11:30, absolutely.
What time is it?
10 after 11.
Okay. So talk for 15 minutes.
I could talk. It's easy enough for me.
Well,
okay, all right. You're still going. All right, let me talk about Joel Rothman. Joel is E-M-A-N. Joel, he's the editor. Joel came to the Chronicle about 8 months after I did, or a year after I did. He worked under Al Bloom. After I became business manager when Gollum died, I recognized that working with Bloom, who was a unique individual and who had a business acumen of zero, who was only concerned about his own stuff. And this is Al, I can't deny what he is. I worked with Joel. Joel and I put the paper out. We kind of operated around Al and let Al go to all these things, let him be honored, and let him tell the world how he's saving the world, and let him do whatever he's doing. I had to get a paper out. That's what I did. And Joel and I worked together. When it was decided that Al Bloom would retire, it was a little bit of a controversy because he didn't want to retire, but he was retired. He did not make it easy for Joel to succeed him. They convened a search committee. They brought people in from all over the country. We spent something like $20,000. My position was, why the hell are we going out to bring somebody in when we have somebody who's been doing the job, essentially, because Joel was, in effect, the editor of the paper. So why are we playing games? Well, in doing that, I jeopardized my own position, because then they start questioning, well, what is your role with the paper? So I went through what I call my hell period. 3 months where I decided that I think I'm getting the hell out of here. I mean, to work with people and to suffer the slings of ingratitude is something I didn't particularly want to do. All right, fine. Fortunately, my wife has more sense than I do, and she said, shut up and just wait and see if the process worked. Okay, fine. They decided that they would make me the general manager. With complete authority of the paper, Joel would become executive editor of the paper. And I will never forget this as long as I live. We had a session with the board. I went in once, and Al Bloom went in second. He sat there when I made my presentation, and vice versa.
What was your position then?
I was business manager at the time. And I made a position with the kind of how I envisioned the paper. Al Bloom took a position that the editor should be supreme, that whatever monies the editor needed, he should have, and it's the function of the business department just to supply money and not have any input into the editorial content of the paper. Fine. Leonard Rudolph, who was on the committee, said to him, do you think Al Zecker is going to sit still for this? And Bloom said, well, if he can't go with history, then he'll have to get out. And Leonard said, that's your point of view. It's not ours. It was given to me in verbatim. Okay. Bloom said, when they asked him about Joel, he said, and I'll never... I get a little violent on this one. He said, considering his lack of experience on a general newspaper, he could do on the weekly. That's called being praised with faint praise. If you're going to settle for the incompetent, you might as well go for him. I was furious. And I told them, it's either Joel or no one, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to work with anyone else because I'm not in the position of starting to train someone. All right, they agreed to give Joel a position. We've worked very well together. He has his idiosyncrasies. Sometimes editors think that since they write for the world and no one writes as well as they do, they write for God, and God is telling them how to write. I know better. Sometimes they have to be made to understand they're also an employee here. There's a sign that I have someplace around here that I used to put up occasionally whenever I would get delusions of grandeur, and it would say, Zecker, remember, you just work here. Take your money and go home. Because you can't have delusions of grandeur when you're working for someone else. It's one of the disciplines you live under. Joel has done a remarkable job. A lot of the success of the Chronicle I attribute to him. A lot of the things I think we still should be doing that he doesn't do, but that's Barbara's problem now. Barbara has to handle those things. But the fact that we have not had the wars here between editorial and business, I attribute a lot to him, because he understands what goes into making a paper work. Money! Without money, there's no paper.
You need more than money.
You need a step. Money is a wonderful conduit. I remember at one of my meetings with my officers, when I came to the Chronicle, I'm digressing a little place, the usual salary increase at the Chronicle would be $2.50 a week.